Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. This episode, on Thursday, March 20th, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Secrecy clouds Arizona's lethal injection protocol as the state restarts executions. Make them fear voters more than Trump. Kelly Gallego rally against GOP Medicaid cuts. Hobbs, GOP leaders trade accusations over DCS funding shortfall for group homes. Apache Strong, mural honors slain teen Emily Pike as community demands justice. ACLU threatens legal action if Cottonwood bans minors from drag performances. Raul Grijalva remembered as champion for tribal communities across Arizona. And let's get started. Our first story, secrecy clouds Arizona's lethal injection protocol as the state restarts executions. The decision by Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs to resume capital punishment aligns with a larger trend of death penalty states hiding key details about executions, by Pascal Sabino and Lauren Gill of Bolts, March 18, 2025. In the nearly three decades Barry Jones spent on Arizona's death row, he often contemplated how he would die. A series of failed appeals to prove his innocence had culminated with the U.S. Supreme Court rejecting his most promising bid for freedom in May 2022. Just days before the ruling, the state had executed its first prisoner in almost 8 years, raising the prospect of not just death, but a potentially drawn-out and bloody one. Media witnesses reported watching executioners spend 25 minutes struggling to find a vein to insert an IV line before cutting into the prisoner's groin. The state would have similar problems executing two more prisoners in 2022. Of the seven bungled executions in the country that year, Arizona was responsible for three. Jones was ultimately freed from prison in 2023 after agreeing to a plea deal, but he still thinks about the people he left behind on death row. "Everybody on death row thinks about it," said Jones, "of problems with executions in the state. They butcher a man before they kill him." Katie Hobbs, a Democrat who narrowly secured the governor's mansion in November 2022, halted executions in Arizona shortly after taking office in January 2023. Hobbs, who flipped the governor's seat to Democrats for the first time since 2009, ordered an independent investigation with the goal of improving the transparency, accountability, and safety of the execution process. In an executive order, Hobbs noted that Arizona has a history of executions that have resulted in serious questions about the state prison system's execution protocols and lack of transparency. But in November 2024, 3 weeks after Donald Trump won the presidential election, Hobbs reversed her position, abruptly pulling the plug on the investigation and announcing the state would resume executions, despite the probe uncovering significant flaws with the way the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry, ADCRR, carried out lethal injections. Hobbs instead pointed to an internal ADCRR review that cleared the way for the state to restart executions. Arizona is now set to execute Aaron Gunches on Wednesday, marking the first execution in the U.S. under a Democratic governor since 2017. former Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe oversaw three executions. Hobbs' decision to restart Arizona's death penalty, despite lingering questions about how the state executes people, aligns with a larger trend of other active death penalty states, all of them governed by Republicans, trying to hide the process from public view. As journalists and death penalty lawyers questioned whether poor quality lethal injection drugs or unqualified and untrained staff were leading to long, painful executions, more states turned to secrecy. At least 16 death penalty states, including Arizona, have enacted legislation that allows them to hide the identities of executioners and lethal drug suppliers. Hobbs also joined other officials in death penalty states who paused executions only to resume them after an internal review gave the all clear. In 2022, Alabama Governor Katie Ivey ordered an investigation into the state's execution process after a string of three prolonged and bloody lethal injections. The probe, which was conducted by prison officials, lasted just over 3 months and found that there were no deficiencies. In Oklahoma, the Department of Public Safety led an inquiry into how it puts prisoners to death following its botched execution of Clayton Lockett. When the state resumed executions 4 months later, executioners used the wrong drug, and the prisoner, Charles Warner, said he felt like his body was on fire before he died. The absence of publicly available information on the drugs and people involved in capital punishment makes it difficult for watchdogs to exercise oversight over executions. There's not a single state that's carrying out executions with transparency, said Robert Dunham, director of the Death Penalty Policy Project, an independent research program. One would hope that people in the office would have the courage to stand up for fair processes and transparency, but that just isn't always the case. In a draft report of his preliminary findings last year, David Duncan, the retired federal magistrate judge appointed by Hobbs to investigate Arizona's execution practices, detailed chilling examples of failures that can occur when others are not watching, from corrections officials seeking to learn on the eve of an execution what doses of legal drugs to administer from Wikipedia, to shipments of state-procured legal drugs delivered to a private home in Phoenix with no apparent or verifiable chain of custody, to the storage of lethal drugs in unmarked jars with no labeling whatsoever. Duncan concluded that lethal injection, while theoretically achievable, is in actual practice fundamentally unreliable, unworkable, and unacceptably prone to errors, recommending that the state pass legislation to authorize firing squad executions, which he said did not pose the same challenges. Shortly after the recommendation, Hobbs fired Duncan, telling him that he'd gone beyond the scope of his job. In calling to restart executions, Hobbs did not address Duncan's concerns with transparency, but instead relied on an internal review led by ADCRR Director Ryan Thornell, who said he made several changes to the execution protocol, including a new medical team with two doctors and a phlebotomist whose identities and qualifications he did not disclose. ADCRR's review also brushed over issues documented by Duncan, like the unmarked jar of lethal injection drugs, which Thornell said was done to hide the name of the drug's manufacturer. Dale Beitch, a retired federal public defender who has represented men on death row in Arizona, told Bolts that ADCRR's review was inadequate. She did not keep her promise, Beitch said of Hobbs. There is not the transparency and accountability that she said she was going to bring to the process. Hobbs isn't the first Arizona governor to halt capital punishment after an execution gone awry, only to defer to an internal review conducted by the state prison system. In 2014, Arizona executed Joseph Wood with an experimental cocktail of midazolam, a sedative, and the opioid hydromorphone. states had turned to new methods after pharmaceutical companies refused to sell their drugs for executions, and it was just the second time the combination had been used to put someone to death. The execution took almost 2 hours, during which Wood gasped and snorted more than 600 times. By its end, executioners had administered 15 times the standard dose prescribed in the execution protocol. Governor Jan Brewer, a Republican, ordered ADCRR to temporarily pause executions and investigate what had gone wrong. When the agency released its findings, it concluded that the execution was handled in accordance with all departmental procedures. But the death penalty remained paused in Arizona for years after a federal judge issued an injunction putting executions on hold while other death row inmates sued over the state's new drug combination. The state's corrections department rewrote its execution protocol to comply with the court by 2017, so that only single doses of sodium thiopental or pentobarbital could be used, but Arizona didn't resume executions until 2022 because of difficulties acquiring the drugs. As Arizona prepares to execute Gunches, the state still hasn't answered key questions about its processes, such as where it sourced its drugs. An invoice obtained by The Guardian showed that the state bought a key ingredient to make pentobarbital in 2020 for $1.5 million. Thornell, the prison system director, said in his report to Hobbs that the agency had thrown out compounded pentobarbital that had expired, but provided few details about the status of the raw material used to make the drugs that's still in ADCRR's possession. Thornell said the agency spoke with the supplier about the raw material's shelf life, expiration dates, and proper testing protocols, but did not disclose any additional details about when it expires or whether it's safe to use in executions. Making it easier for Arizona to resume executions without accounting for its past failings, Gunches waived his appeals and volunteered to be executed, forgoing any legal challenges to the protocol that could have forced the state to disclose that information. Corina Lane, a law professor at the University of Richmond who studies capital punishment, told Bolts that Arizona is dodging accountability by abandoning the independent review of its execution protocols and executing someone who won't contest their execution. Earlier this year, Lane urged a court to halt Gunch's execution over concerns that the state's protocols will result in, quote, torturous deaths. There are two ways to know whether a state can legally and constitutionally carry out an execution, she told Bolts. One is an independent review. The other is litigation. Arizona got rid of both of those. Seven states that have resumed execution after a pause of 5 or more years have restarted the death penalty with a volunteer, according to Dunham. The machinery of death is hard to get going, but once it gets going, it's easier to continue, he said. It's harder to get going when the first execution is subject to meaningful appellate review. While Hobbs said that she felt prepared to resume carrying out death sentences because of the changes made as part of ADCRR's review, advocates have other theories about why the governor chose to start executing prisoners again. Lane, for instance, charged that Hobbs' willingness to overlook the problems surfaced by the independent review is a patently political appeal to conservatives after her narrow victory in 2022. It is no coincidence that the state terminated its independent review within days after the election of Donald Trump, she said. Hobbs' reversal also coincided with a lawsuit filed by Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell, seeking to win the authority to set execution dates, an authority that's reserved for the state's attorney general. Mitchell dropped her lawsuit after Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat who won by just 280 votes in 2022, sought a death warrant for Gunches. If Mitchell's lawsuit had moved forward, the state risked the possibility of the court, made up of entirely conservative justices, siding with the Republican prosecutor and allowing county attorneys to ask for death warrants, which could trigger even more executions. Without the political pressure from Mitchell, it is likely that executions would not have restarted, Dunham told Bolts. Hobbs' office did not respond to Bolts' request for comment on this story. Unlike Mitchell in Maricopa County, some Arizona prosecutors are moving away from the death penalty. In left-leaning Pima County, the second-largest county in the state, County Attorney Laura Conover has instructed her prosecutors to stop seeking the death penalty over concerns about the way the state executes people. There are 15 people from the county on death row who were prosecuted by previous county attorneys, however. Conover said that Pima County now illustrates how the death penalty is not necessary to maintain public safety. Murders and violent crime have fallen under her tenure, which aligns with research showing that capital punishment doesn't deter crime. When dealing with capital crimes, Conover instead seeks life imprisonment without parole, which she told Bolts is itself a type of death sentence. We take it seriously and we proceed with caution because we are sentencing a person to prison and for them to die there, Conover said. The death penalty is simply not necessary anymore. Arizona's last Democratic governor, Janet Napolitano, oversaw one execution in her tenure ending in 2009. But since then, the party has come to a national consensus against the death penalty. In 2016, the Democratic platform included a goal of abolishing the death penalty and carried the issue on to the 2020 agenda, culminating in former President Joe Biden's commutation of 37 federal death row sentences in his final days in office. Plus, many Democratic governors issued moratoriums on the death penalty, including in California and Pennsylvania, or granted clemency to people on death row in their state, which explains the roughly 8-year streak since the last execution under a Democratic governor. But there was no mention of the death penalty in the 2024 platform. The shift mimics a broader backtracking on criminal justice reforms that became key campaign issues in 2020 following the George Floyd uprisings, but have since diminished as a priority within the Democratic Party. But the death penalty isn't inherently a partisan issue, said Nicholas Cote, a strategist for the advocacy group Conservatives Concerned About the Death Penalty. He told Bolts that many Republicans oppose the death penalty because they believe it conflicts with conservative principles. Even someone who believes the state should have the authority to put some people to death still object to the secrecy that surrounds the process and the risk of torturous executions that violate constitutional protections, Cote said. This is the ultimate state power. Even if you believe the death penalty is appropriate in certain situations, the people have the right to know the law is being followed, Cote said. The governor has reversed course, but everything flagged for concern still holds true. In a bid to stop the debate around capital punishment in Arizona altogether, State Representative Patty Contreras, a Democrat, has introduced a bill to abolish the death penalty, which would ultimately require a ballot measure to amend the state's constitution. Contreras told Bolts she is seeking support from colleagues across party lines who question whether there is a humane way to do this and why the report was stopped, and hopes more lawmakers will call on the governor to stop Gunch's execution. Across the aisle, Arizona Republicans have advanced a bill to legalize executions by firing squad, a method revived in South Carolina that until this year had only previously been used 3 times, all in Utah. Sponsors of the proposal, which would also require a public vote of approval to become law, cite Duncan's recommendation for the state to adopt the method. There are 112 people on death row in Arizona, and 25 have exhausted or waived their appeals, according to the state, and are eligible for execution. So far, Gunches is the only prisoner who has received a death warrant. Kate Jutras, executive director of advocacy group Death Penalty Alternatives for Arizona, became friends with Gunches through her work. In a virtual town hall hosted by opponents of the death penalty earlier this month, Jutra said that while Gunches has made the decision to be executed with a sound mind, she worries that the governor is choosing to look the other way as this execution moves forward, despite knowing that there are extreme challenges regarding how the lethal injection process has happened here in the last 5 years under the previous administration. So there's extreme concerns about what's going to happen within this execution, Jutra said. In the weeks leading up to his execution, Gunches has been working out daily in hopes that being in good shape will help avoid complications with finding a vein, according to Jutras. She told the town hall that she speaks regularly with Gunches, describing him as a close friend who enjoys feeding feral cats in the prison yard. Gunches also launched a program that provides books for Arizona's death row inmates. She said that Gunches declined her efforts to be there for his execution to spare her from witnessing something go wrong. He is very aware of what potential complications can happen and how traumatic that can be for witnesses, Jutra said. Despite his decision to volunteer for this, he does have serious hesitancy about the procedure. And that concludes this first story. Secrecy clouds Arizona's lethal injection protocol as the state restarts executions. Our next story, make them fear voters more than Trump. Kelly Gallego rally against GOP Medicaid cuts, by Jared McDonald Evoy, March 17, 2025. U.S. Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly sounded the alarm about Republican plans to slash Medicaid health care funding, telling attendees at a town hall in Scottsdale that working-class Arizonans will be devastated if voters don't get engaged and apply pressure now. Kelly said that the real stories of those who will be directly harmed by the cuts that President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans will pursue, a high probability in his estimation, to offset the cost of tax cuts, are the most powerful weapons that voters have. Gallego said that voters have to give Republicans in Congress a reason to break with Trump. You have to make them fear the voters more than they fear Trump, Gallego said. That's the only thing they understand. The senator spoke with constituents Monday at a health care facility in Scottsdale about concerns that Republicans have Medicaid in their sights. House Republicans passed a budget resolution last week that directs the Energy and Commerce Committee to cut at least $880 billion from programs under its jurisdiction, of which Medicaid is by far the largest. Republicans have said that they have no intention of cutting the program, but Project 2025, a far-right blueprint for Trump to dramatically reshape the federal government and eliminate the social safety net spending that conservatives have long opposed, calls for deep cuts to Medicaid. The town hall was held at the NOAH Chola Health Center, a facility that Gallego and Kelly said would likely face closure if cuts to Medicaid happen. Many of the facility's patients are enrolled in the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, or AHCCCS, the state's Medicaid program. Others have health coverage through Medicare, which provides services for older Americans. The thing we are talking about today hasn't happened yet, Kelly stressed to his audience, but he and Gallego said it was important for people to get engaged now instead of waiting. An estimated 600,000 people in Arizona alone could lose medical coverage if Medicaid is cut by one-third, the scenario that GOP lawmakers have been currently proposing. As of February, there were 2 million people in Arizona, more than 20% of the people in the state, enrolled in AHCCCS. If those cuts go into effect, approximately 47,000 rural residents would lose their health coverage, as would 190,000 children. More than one in six seniors would lose nursing home care. Approximately 116,800 Native Americans in Arizona are enrolled in the American Indian Health Services Plan through AHCCCS that would also see a cut under the proposal. These are largely working-class Arizonans, Gallego said. If they could afford their own health insurance, they would do that. Both Gallego and Kelly warned that if the cuts take place, the use of emergency rooms will go up, as people will likely put off care for longer, leading to worse outcomes and worse conditions. Both men said that it will take public pressure to make Republicans not vote on a proposal to cut Medicaid funding, and pushed back against those in the audience who voiced concerns about working with Republicans. Polling has been showing that voters are increasingly wanting Democratic politicians to fight Trump policies as opposed to compromise. They fight dirty, and we're not willing to get in the mud with them. Marcos Castillo with Protect Our Care said to the two senators to cheers from the audience, "Maybe it's time we start getting in the mud with them." Others in attendance thought making phone calls, talking to their friends, and encouraging Republicans to vote no wasn't enough. "We can't wait. How do we prepare?" Quiana Brown, the mother of a foster child with special medical needs, said to Gallego and Kelly, "Would you mind telling your colleagues in Washington they're burning down this house while there are still people inside?" Both Gallego and Kelly said they felt for her and her husband's concerns, but reiterated there needs to be a grassroots movement of people putting pressure on lawmakers to vote to not cut Medicaid funding. "There is nothing happening in this country that says we need to cut Medicare," Gallego said. "We need to fight them. We need to grind them down." There's also a sidebar to this story: will Republicans cut Medicare? Kelly and Gallego agree that Republicans want to gut Medicaid and that doing so would be a disaster for Arizona. But they differed on whether they expect Republicans to target Medicare as well, something they've said they don't plan to cut. "I don't think they're dumb enough to go after Medicare," Gallego said. "I do think they're dumb enough to go after Medicaid." Kelly disagreed. "I think some of them are dumb enough," he said. And that concludes this story. Make them fear voters more than Trump. Kelly, Gallego rally against GOP Medicaid cuts. You are listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Next up, Hobbs, GOP leaders trade accusations over DCS funding shortfall for group homes. The governor says Republicans are lying about a routine transfer request to deflect from their plans to cut disability services. By Caitlin Sievers, March 17, 2025. In another battle over funding for critical services, legislative Republicans have accused Arizona's Democratic governor of financial malfeasance. In response, Governor Katie Hobbs alleged that GOP leaders lied to reporters about a standard budgeting transfer to take attention away from their plans to cut services to people with disabilities. During a press conference on Monday, Steve Montenegro, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, told reporters that the Department of Child Safety would go bankrupt next month without a bailout. He blamed Hobbs for the funding shortfall. Montenegro said that the legislature would force Hobbs to cover the shortfall with funds from her own budget and announced the creation of a special committee on executive budget mismanagement to investigate what Republicans claim were her mismanagement of funds for DCS and the Division of Developmental Disabilities, which is also on the verge of running out of money. "This financial mismanagement threatens the most vulnerable children in our state, and House Republicans will not let this stand," Montenegro, a Republican from Goodyear, said. "Once again, we are here being told that we have to clean up Governor Hobbs' mess." But in response, Christian Slater, a spokesman for Hobbs, accused House Republicans of mischaracterizing a routine request to shift funds within DCS to divert attention from their own plan to cut funding for DDD. He said that Republicans were lying about DCS running out of money next week. Instead of preening for the press for political gain, legislative Republicans should stop lying to their own constituents, fund services for Arizonans with autism, Down syndrome, and cerebral palsy, and own up to the pain they want to cause the people of Arizona by presenting their budget proposal, Slater said in an emailed statement. "Anything short of that is cowardly and a complete and total dereliction of duty." The trading of public accusations stemmed from a request from DCS to transfer $6.5 million from surplus funds for kinship care and foster home placement to pay for a shortfall in the budget for congregate care, the formal name for group homes for foster children. Without that funding, DCS claims that it wouldn't have the funds to pay those group homes and the children staying in them would be kicked out, possibly having to bunk in the DCS office, causing additional trauma and disruption to their lives. The $6.5 million would cover the state's payments to residential care facilities that house children who are in DCS custody but haven't been placed in a foster home or with a family member through April 24th, according to the letter from DCS to the Joint Legislative Budget Committee. Slater pointed out that the DCS had made similar transfer requests each year, dating back to 2016, in several cases more millions of dollars, and Republicans had never called a press conference about it until Monday. Who waits until 19 days before bankruptcy to tell anybody about it? Montenegro asked during the press conference. In an emailed statement to the Arizona Mirror, Cynthia Weiss, a spokesperson for DCS, refuted Montenegro's claim that DCS and Hobbs waited until the last minute to inform legislative leaders that congregate care funding was running out. Weiss told the Mirror that the department has projected an upcoming shortfall in the congregate care budget in its monthly report to legislative leaders and JLBC since August 2024. The fiscal year began in July 2024. Weiss characterized appropriation transfers between line items in the DCS budget as, quote, common and necessary. But House Republicans tied the budget shortfall in the congregate care budget to increased payments to congregate care provider Sunshine Residential Homes and its owners, who have made more than $400,000 in political contributions to Hobbs and the Arizona Democratic Party since 2022, according to the Arizona Republic. Sunshine Residential and Hobbs are at the center of investigations by Democratic Attorney General Chris Mays and the Republican Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell for accusations of a pay-to-play scheme. Weiss said that increased congregate care payments stemmed from a resolicitation of the congregate care contract in 2024, which was past its five-year term and was overdue to be rebid. This is the second publicly fought budgeting battle between the Hobbs administration and legislative Republicans in the past couple of months. In February, Hobbs requested an additional $122 million for services provided through the Division of Developmental Disabilities, which is expected to run out of money in May. The state's fiscal year ends June 30th. Legislative Republicans and Hobbs have blamed one another for the funding lapse, caused in part by increased spending in the Parents as Paid Caregiver program. The Republicans who control the legislature had denied increased funding for the program in this year's budget and accused Hobbs of going forward with spending on it anyway. If the legislature doesn't approve additional funding by the end of April, DDD won't be able to pay its providers, and tens of thousands of Arizonans with disabilities will lose access to vital medical services, help with daily living, and physical and occupational therapies. Advocates, people with disabilities, and their families came together last month to put pressure on the state government to fund DDD, and in response, a group of Republican senators last week promised to ensure that DDD services continue. But beyond their expectations that the Hobbs administration and the Department of Economic Security, of which the DDD is a part, be held accountable for the situation and help to create a funding solution, the senators didn't explain how they would make that happen. Representative David Livingston, the Peoria Republican who is chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, said in January that the Parents as Paid Caregivers program would have to face cuts, possibly upwards of 50%, to balance next year's budget. And that concludes this story. Hobbs, GOP leaders trade accusations over DCS funding shortfall for group homes. Next up, Representative Raul Grijalva, environmental protection champion, dies at 77. Longtime Arizona congressman remembered as fierce advocate for the environment and social justice. By Caitlin Sievers, March 13, 2025. U.S. Congressman Raul Grijalva has died at the age of 77, his office announced Thursday. The Democrat, who represented Arizona's 7th District, died March 13th from complications of cancer treatment. Grijalva announced his lung cancer diagnosis last April and said he planned to pursue a vigorous course of treatment. Grijalva of Tucson spent more than 50 years in public service representing the people of southern Arizona, including more than 20 years as a U.S. congressman. In a statement on Thursday, Grijalva's office wrote that his colleagues were heartbroken to announce the death of a man who was a fierce advocate for environmental protection, including Arizona's water rights, as well as for indigenous communities and immigrants. In a statement, the Pima County Democratic Party praised Grijalva's dedication to education, the environment, and civil rights. Providence demands us bid farewell to our friend, but Arizona's appreciation for Raul Grijalva is undying. His work endures, the Pima County Democratic Party wrote. His spirit is on our landscapes, our communities, and in the hearts of all who believe in a more just and compassionate world. With a passion for his community as well as for the planet, Grijalva was the former chairman of the House National Resources Committee, chair emeritus of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and a longtime member of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Sierra Club Executive Director Ben Jealous said in a statement that the organization was mourning Grijalva's death while also celebrating his legacy with the hope that it will serve as an inspiration for future conservation leaders. He combined passion, advocacy, and leadership that resulted in preserving some of this nation's most treasured landscapes for generations to come, Jealous said. His work with tribal nations incorporated the voice of those who have stewarded these lands since time immemorial into public lands management policy. One of the congressman's major accomplishments was his part in the drafting of the Environmental Justice for All Act, which aimed to empower people to stand up for their communities. His strong belief was that no matter where you're from, one truth unites us all. Everyone deserves the freedom to live a healthy life, and every child deserves a safe and fair chance at their future, his office wrote. Grijalva's other successes in Congress included his work to protect the Grand Canyon for future generations, to fight for climate change, and to fund conservation programs. Grijalva advocated for student loan forgiveness, protections for farm workers and other laborers exposed to heat, and expansion of early childhood education. Some of these victories seemed out of reach when he first came to Congress, but with support from community, colleagues, allies, and staff, he helped make them real, his office wrote. Grijalva began his political career in 1974 when he was elected to the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board, where he served until 1986. He was elected to the Pima County Board of Supervisors in 1988 and held a seat on the board until he was elected to Congress in 2002. Grijalva leaves behind his wife Ramona, daughters Adelita and Marissa and Raquel, and 5 grandchildren. Democratic Congressman Greg Stanton said in a statement that Grijalva will be rightly remembered as one of the most consequential leaders in Arizona political history. Raul never lost sight of the values he learned as a young community organizer, tirelessly advocating for immigrant families, education, and social justice, Stanton said. But perhaps his biggest accomplishment is his mentorship of a generation of young people in southern Arizona. While Grijalva's colleagues said in the statement that they were heartbroken by the news of his death, they said they were determined to carry on his legacy. From Tucson to Nogales and beyond, he worked tirelessly for transformational improvements, Grijalva's office wrote in the statement. Representative Grijalva pushed for new public parks, child care centers, health care clinics, local businesses, and affordable housing, have breathed new life into neighborhoods across southern Arizona. In a statement, U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego described Grijalva as not only a colleague, but a friend. As another Latino working in public service, I can say from experience that he served as a role model to many young people across the Grand Canyon State, Gallego wrote. He spent his life as a voice for equality. I am praying for his family during this time of grief, and I hope that they find comfort knowing his legacy is one that will stand tall for generations. Grijalva's seat in Congress in an overwhelmingly blue district will be filled via a special election. Governor Katie Hobbs is tasked with setting a special primary election for a date within the next 90 days and a special general election within the following 60 days. In its statement, Grijalva's office said it will continue to offer constituent services in the meantime. To his last day, he remained a servant leader who put everyday people first while in office, Hobbs said in a statement. I join every Arizonans in mourning his passing. May he rest in peace. That concludes this story. Representative Raul Grijalva, environmental protection champion, dies at 77. And in a related story, Raul Grijalva remembered as champion for tribal communities across Arizona, by Shandine Silversmith, March 13, 2025. Tribal nations and leaders throughout Arizona honored U.S. Representative Raul Grijalva, who died Thursday as a warrior for indigenous communities, and commended his continuous efforts to support indigenous people's fight to protect the environment, water, and natural resources. It was well known that Congresswoman Grijalva was a champion of tribal nations and worked to ensure that tribal communities had a voice in Congress to speak to important policy issues. Salt River, Pima Maricopa Indian Community President Martin Javier said in a statement. Javier said that as the longest-serving member of the Arizona Congressional Delegation, Grijalva was keenly aware of issues impacting tribal communities within his district and across the state. In this time of need, we acknowledge the sacrifice that he and his family gave in service to the country, and we send our deepest condolences and prayers, he added. Grijalva passed away at 77 from complications related to lung cancer treatments, his office announced on Thursday. He revealed his cancer diagnosis last April and expressed his intention to pursue an aggressive treatment regimen. I call him Tio Raul, Pima County Recorder Gabrielle Cesares Kelly said. Although unrelated to the congressman, she said she used the Spanish term for uncle to show respect and affection for someone she deeply admired. Cesares Kelly first met Grijalva on the Tejano Odom Nation during his numerous visits to the Tejano Odom Community College, where she was employed. Despite his powerful title, he was incredibly friendly and intentionally sought out conversations with everyday people, she said, adding that he made people feel important and inspired them to think better. Cesares Kelly said the congressman advocated for several important issues dear to her, including tribal colleges, environmental concerns, and voting rights. When she was elected Pima County Recorder, she said Grijalva continued to encourage her and emphasize the importance of standing her ground, especially in the face of white supremacy. I am honored to have known him personally and spent time learning from him, she added. He will be greatly missed. Grijalva of Tucson spent more than 50 years in public service representing the people of southern Arizona, including more than 20 years in Congress. He represented Arizona's 7th District, which includes the Tejano Odom Nation, the Pascua Yaqui Tribe, the Akchin Indian Community, the Gila River Indian Community, the Fort Yuma Quechan Tribe, and the Cocopah Tribe. Individual Tejano co-founder April Ignacio said they are devastated by the loss of Grijalva. She said the group was the pebble in his shoe when they began, but he was always gracious. He made space for us, Ignacio said, even though their organization first met Grijalva when they crashed one of his town hall meetings in Tucson in 2017. She said that Grijalva told the crowd that night that no one gets a pass and they all need to hold elected officials accountable. Ignacio said Indivisible Tejano went to that town hall to hold him accountable, and he still took the time to take a picture with them. He was tough on us, but we know he believed in the hard work we found ourselves in, Ignacio said, adding that the best advice he gave them was to stick to your guns. Indivisible Tejano wishes to extend our heartfelt condolences to his wife, children and grandchildren, his staff, and all those who knew him as we did, she added. With a passion for his community and the planet, Grijalva served as the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, chairman emeritus of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and he was a longtime member of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. As a congressman, Grijalva routinely included indigenous communities in his legislative efforts, from infrastructure developments and road maintenance to environmental protection and healthcare access. We have an atrocious history of injustice towards the indigenous people of this land that goes against the very values of our country and that we must constantly work to rectify, his website states. Former Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez shared a statement on his Facebook page honoring the congressman, stating that he and his staff were essential partners during his administration. Nez said that Grijalva helped the Navajo Nation secure the funding and resources needed to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic and protect public lands near the Grand Canyon. Grijalva was always a strong ally to the Navajo Nation in Indian Country, Nez said. He served as a true public servant for the people of his district and of Arizona. Nez said that his legacy will live on through the impacts of his public service and the countless people he touched along the way. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin released a statement on his Facebook page in honor of Grijalva, saying that no words can express his deep gratitude for the congressman's tireless efforts on behalf of the tribal communities across Arizona. He was a champion who answered the call of those who had often been overlooked and unheard, Nigrin said. In a world where such calls can be easy to ignore, Representative Grijalva was always there to lift those voices. Nigrin said that Grijalva's work was instrumental in protecting sacred lands, including the Grand Canyon, and his commitment as a co-sponsor for the Northeastern Arizona Indian Water Rights Settlement Act, which will secure water for the Navajo Nation. My heartfelt condolences go out to his family, and I pray that the holy people provide them with comfort during this difficult time, he said. That concludes this story. Raul Grijalva remembered as champion for tribal communities across Arizona. Next up, my dad didn't go to war for nothing. Pentagon scrubs Native American heroes from website. Department of Defense deletes co-talkers, two Jima flag raiser Hayes, under Trump's DEI order, by Shandine Silversmith, March 19, 2025. Prominent Native American figures in U.S. military history have been erased from the U.S. Department of Defense's website as part of the sweeping effort stemming from President Donald Trump's executive order banning diversity, equity, and inclusion. The Department of Defense website removed articles featuring details about the Navajo code talkers, Navajo men who served during World War II and used their language as a secret code in battle, along with U.S. Marine Ira Hayes from the Gila River Indian community, who helped raise the flag during the Battle of Iwo Jima in World War II. Navajo code has absolutely nothing to do with DEI, because Navajo code was a weapon, Navajo code talker Peter McDonald said in response to the removal during an interview with the Arizona Mirror. McDonald, 96, is one of two living Navajo code talkers. He served in the South Pacific as a code talker and in North China with the 6th Marine Division. McDonald said that dismissing the code talkers as DEI is a terrible misrepresentation by the United States. The complex Navajo language was used as a weapon in World War II against the enemy because the Japanese were breaking every military code that U.S. troops were using in the Pacific theater. It took the Navajo people to develop a whole new code in the Navajo language, he added, and it became the only military code in modern history never broken by an enemy. In a general keyword search on Tuesday of the Department of Defense's website for the Navajo code talkers, only 8 results appeared, but none related to information or articles detailing their role in World War II. 0 results appeared in a search for Ira Hayes. the Navajo Code Talkers earned their place in history through their courage and sacrifice, giving their lives in defense of this nation, Navajo Nation Council Speaker Crystalline Curley said in a press release. Erasing their extraordinary contributions from formal military history is not only disrespectful, it is dishonorable. Having articles and information about the Navajo Code Talkers on the department's website is the right thing, McDonald said, because it provides education for everyone that weapons do not just include guns, but language. He added that their weapon helped preserve America's freedom, and we were happy to use that weapon to help. It's important for the entire nation to know that the Navajo Code has absolutely nothing to do with DEI, he said. He hopes the Pentagon will return all the content so they can learn. In an email response to the Arizona Mirror, a Department of Defense spokesperson who wouldn't provide their name said the DOD is in the process of restoring the content about the Navajo Code Talkers, which had been removed during the auto removal process. No time frame was provided for restoring the content, and the spokesperson did not respond to questions about the deleted content related to Ira Hayes. Ron Kinsel, the son of the late Navajo Code Talker John Kinsel Sr., said he was shocked to learn that all articles featuring the Navajo Code Talkers had been removed. My dad didn't go to war for nothing, he said, adding that the United States wouldn't be the country it is now if it wasn't for the Navajo Code Talkers. The Navajo Code Talkers participated in all assaults led by the U.S. Marines in the Pacific from 1942 to 1945, including Guadalcanal, Tuaera, Peleliu, and Iwo Jima. The total number of Navajo Code Talkers who served in the U.S. Marines is unknown, but it is estimated to be between 350 and 420. McDonald's daughter, Charity, said she wasn't shocked by the removal. It is merely a new form of erasure of indigenous people, something the United States has done throughout its history. You cannot erase an entire history of people, she said, especially today when information can be accessed in various ways. Our federal government is doing this purposely, Charity added, that it's an action they're taking to show people that they can. The federal government is making a statement saying this is how they feel, she added. Charity said indigenous people have given a lot to the federal government, and during World War II, the military came to the Navajo people and asked them for help. They used the Navajo language to help them win the war, she said. Navajo Nation, Gila River Indian Community respond. Leaders from the Navajo Nation and the Gila River Indian Community sent letters to the Department of Defense to ask why the details about the Navajo Code Talkers and Hayes were deleted. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Rowe Lewis said removing information about Hayes and the Navajo Code Talkers due to the scrubbing for DEI initiatives is, quote, misguided and irresponsible. Lewis said his tribe sent an official letter to the Department of Defense on Tuesday, but have not received a response. Sadly, we're no strangers to being erased, Lewis said, noting it has happened to indigenous peoples throughout history. All the stories of Ira Hayes and all Native veterans, including the Code Talkers, have to be rectified ASAP, he said. Lewis said Hayes is a significant figure in military history, and members of the Gila River Indian community learn about him from a very young age. Hayes, alongside five other Marines, raised the U.S. flag on the island of Iwo Jima at the summit of Mount Suribachi on February 23, 1945. He was part of the 5th Marine Division and fought in the Battle of Iwo Jima until the island was secured on March 26, 1945. The photograph of the flag raising during the Battle of Iwo Jima is one of the most iconic images of World War II, taken months into the battle by Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal. Lewis said Hayes' story and the image of the Marines raising the flag at Iwo Jima is historic for Native military service. Native Americans have always served in our country's military, in all branches, at the highest levels of any other group, Lewis said. Indigenous people across the United States serve in the armed forces at 5 times the national average, according to the National Indian Council on Aging, and have served with distinction in every major conflict for over 200 years. Lewis said that recognizing the patriotism and courage of Native American soldiers has nothing to do with any type of DEI initiative. It's simply an offering of respect for extraordinary service and bravery in the line of duty, he added. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin sent a letter to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth on Tuesday, asking him to explain the removal of the Navajo Code Talkers' information from military websites. Appropriately recognizing the work of the Navajo Code Talkers is profoundly significant to the Navajo Nation, Nigrin said in his letter, requesting the rationale behind the removal. In the letter, Nigrin wrote about how Trump welcomed the Navajo Code Talkers to the White House in 2017 during his first term in office and praised their contributions to the country. We sincerely appreciate this recognition and believe it highlights the importance of preserving the history and legacy of the Navajo Code Talkers, he wrote. Given the profound impact and historic importance of these American heroes, it is imperative that their legacy remains visible and accessible to all Americans, the letter stated. The Navajo Nation Council voiced its disappointment in the removal of the Code Talkers, emphasizing that the Navajo Nation is not a racial group, but a distinct political entity. The Navajo Nation Council is deeply concerned by being conflated into DEI initiatives that fail to recognize our unique political status, Curley said in a press release. The Navajo Nation Council is engaging with the administration to clarify the reasoning behind removing articles. The United States would not be the nation it is today without the bravery and service of the Navajo Nation Code Talkers, Curley said. Their legacy is a cornerstone of American history, and it is essential that their contributions be honored and recognized. And before we go, we have an update on an earlier story. Arizona executes Aaron Gunches for 2002 murder after lengthy legal battle. The death row inmate who spent decades advocating for his own execution was finally put to death. That's March 19th, 2025. And it looks like that's all the time we're going to have for this edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Remember, if you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you can go to sunsounds.org and click on demand podcasts or listen on our app for Apple and Android phones. Thank you so much for joining us. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona.